Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Okay, I'm Jordy Wortman, and I'm an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur since 2003, I guess. And I started out in Bermuda, where I'm from, and basically have a tech background. Now what I'm doing, I've started a .NET agency that has designers and WordPress developers as well, and front-end, back-end. So I'm building that up. I've got about 20 now, and ability to keep growing. And I've just bought my first SaaS, and I'm starting another SaaS. So I'm very busy these days.
I think so we chatted on your podcast originally, I think, and I think this is the second or third time I've had this kind of discussion about like the hybrid or the crossover of agency or service work to product. How did that go for you? Like what was the beginning point and kind of how did you get to now, and then how did you decide to like buy the SaaS? I'd love to kind of start walking through that.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this because, as you mentioned, on my podcast, I don't have nearly as many shows as you, but I've done probably 50 or so. And let's say of the 50 people, it's all SaaS people, because that's what the show's on. Yep. SaaS. I would say at least 60% came from an agency background. So in other words, they're like me. They had, you know, one of them was maybe a content writer, starts out as a freelancer and then goes to an agency and then he starts a product. So that's essentially what I did. I started a SaaS in about 2013, but it's been sort of just kind of running in the background. And so I had experience building it. And when I previously I was in e-commerce, so it's sort of a long story, but I got into e-commerce probably in about 2010 or something, and I sold that business maybe 2015, I think. And so I had some runway, so I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. It was like, I didn't want to get back into e-commerce, so I had the SaaS background, and I had experience with teams because I've been working with teams all over the world for years. And so I found a team, and I thought I wanted to do a lead gen service. So I was basically going out looking for services. So I found a pain point in software developers getting jobs. Mm. So that's what the original business was. So I was like, okay, I'll do lead gen for software developers. They were like, yeah, we really need leads. You know, I'll pay you for them. I'll give you 20%, whatever. And so I started out doing that, and I realized that was a really big pain. And then when I started doing it, I understood why, because I couldn't even get them. So it's really hard. So when I did get them, I was like, well, it's much more valuable for me to keep this lead, because, you know, if I give away 20%, you know, I mean, you know, I did all this work and I'm giving, you know, so if the leads were coming in faster, but because I was cold, I had no history, I had no traffic. So once I started to get some leads, I was like, well, I'll keep these leads and build my own team. So that's essentially how that started. The business is not that old, but it's been growing pretty steadily. I really started to take it seriously probably at the end of last summer. So, you know, 9 months or something. And since that time, I've been working mostly with the same customers, you know, so you can see like lifetime value is quite valuable. Yeah. Yeah, so that's essentially how I got into the agency. The reason I really like this agency model is it's immediately profitable. Yeah. So if anyone's listening, you know, it's like, it's if you're a freelancer and you got a little bit of skills in something, whatever it is, you can build a team around you. And I outsource my team offshore and then mark up and sort of raise the level of you know, the level of professionalism, I guess, and the level of just being on this at like sort of a US European level.
And where is your team that kind of fulfills the services?
They're in India.
Okay.
And usually India has been a problem for me. You know, I've had some teams, I've had some pretty good teams from there, but I've had a lot of bad experiences from there. So originally I was very skeptical when I started to, and I was like, well, you know, I'll try you guys out. I was like, let me see your portfolio. And he sent me the portfolio. I was like, wow, this is actually pretty good. Mm. So I looked around at the apps and there were some really good apps, and the design skills were really good, and so I was like, okay, I'll try you on. So I basically had them build my website. So I was like, okay, I'll try it, and they can build my website. Let's see how it goes. Yeah. And then kind of took it on, sort of baby step into the relationship, which is obviously a great way to do it. You know, it's one thing to interview and look at portfolios, but just a little small project and try them out, see how they work. You know, are they responsive? What are they like at invoice time? Things like that. So it ended up turning out really well. So
what do you think it was about, like, this group, or maybe you working with them differently this time as opposed to, like, difficulties I think that you might have had before that you mentioned? Like, what is it that you think worked now that might not have before? Because I think a lot of folks have, like, skepticism or difficulty or fear of offshore anywhere, maybe India or kind of Southeast Asia, more so than some other places.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's really trial and error. I mean, not to slam India, but I would probably say, unfortunately, I've had 80% of the time has been a bad experience. Pakistan, even worse. But again, you can find these guys, you know, like I'm working with a guy right now that's out of Bangladesh doing something else. And he's great. You know, he's like probably one of the best. So it's really trial and error. So, and I've got a lot of experience in building teams, you know, off, you know, where I was in Mexico for a while and I used Mexican teams and we had some Argentinian teams. I had some guys from, you know, from the Dominican, obviously Eastern Europe. I tried that a lot, and you can get some great guys out of there, but they're a little bit more expensive. And Poland is great. I would say it's sort of mid-level, you know, mid-level pricing. And then, you know, obviously if you want communication to be, if that's really important, you need to really go to the UK, Canada, or the US for English skills at least.
Yeah.
And some customers are really, really particular about that.
And so just as a side, we have our lead developers in South Africa, and I've worked with several people there, and they're all fantastic. You know, like, time zone for us here in Europe is great. They're same time zone. So I would put South Africa right up there with any of, like, the real
that's
first
true.
Tier.
I hadn't. That's sort of, would you consider that nearshore? Or no, that's not even really nearshore, is it? It's really offshore, but at least, yeah. And for English, that's true.
Yeah.
And the lower cost of living down there, I presume.
Yeah, it's great. It's a long way, but it's really not that expensive. I was looking at, before all this COVID stuff, I was looking at flights to go down there and spend a week or something. It was like $600 to go round trip to Cape Town.
Really?
From Geneva. Yeah, so it was pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
So, and I'm asking, like, I get kind of selfish, but I think a lot of people that listen to the show might be freelancers or running an agency and want to get into product. And I've kind of done the same path you have, where I started with Podcast Motor, which is a product I service, and now kind of running it, and Castos, which is definitely like a SaaS product. And kind of at this point now where I kind of am weighing and looking at the value and the positives and negatives of both of those. And I think for me, they definitely have their pluses and minuses, but I'd love to hear from your perspective now, kind of like running an agency, building a SaaS and buying another one. I'd love to hear that story, but kind of how you view those two models.
Yeah. So I think, the agency is a really good way to get the foot in the door. That's what I really use it for. It's quite lucrative, you know? So for example, right now I'm doing this, I'll be working on my SaaS today, but I've got 20 guys billing 8 hours a day today, and I don't even know what they're doing, you know? So they're billing for the agency. Mm. So it's a really good model to immediately start making some money. And so what I do is I'll take some of the proceeds from that. The way I'm running my business basically is just letting the cash build up so that at the end of the year, you know, I have cash to, you know, buy a SaaS, which is what I did with the proceeds so far. So it's been great that way. And it's very expensive getting a SaaS going, especially one that's been struggling. I have to redo the website. So that's hugely time consuming. And that business couldn't afford to really, you know, put a lot of resources into it. So I'm taking money from the agency and diverting it over to the SaaS.
Yeah.
And that's the same with the other SaaS that I'm building. And I wouldn't, the reason I'm building the SaaS is because it's actually a product that will help software developers find leads. And so that was the original idea, because I know it's a huge problem. So I'm building this SaaS to help software developers find leads, and I'm using it myself. So let's say it costs $20,000 to build or something. If I get one good lead from it, it will pay itself off. So that's the sort of justification that I'm using to build it. So even if I don't make it a SaaS, I can use it to get my own leads, and it'll pay for itself. And so I've already used it. It's really sort of rough right now, but I'm using it now to get leads, and I'm getting sales conversations. I just haven't closed anything from it yet, but I haven't been trying that hard either.
Yeah, yeah. What was the tool that you bought?
So it was a online reputation. Really what I did is I bought up my partners. I consider it really a new SaaS because no one has worked on this SaaS literally for 4 years. We were not doing anything. We spent some time in the beginning. We spent some time when it was first coming out from sort of 2013 to 2016 or so, we were working on it. And we sort of had a different style of working. My partners are great guys, but they just had a different style, and they were all in the office. And so I was like, you know, I'll let you guys run it. And, you know, I'll just sort of back off and do my own thing. And then they are entrepreneurs themselves and had their own businesses that started to take off. Mm. And so I had a business, they had a business, and this thing was sort of, we owned it together, but nobody was working on it. And it sort of just, it went up like this, and then it's just been slowly going down right now. And I sort of was waiting. There's customers that have been there for 6 years. So the product is, people love it and use it. So I know that it's good. And so I know I can find other people that like it. And so I just need to do that. And so now I consider it like I just bought this SaaS, and it's a totally new business for me, because essentially it is, because nobody's been working it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I think about and I hear, you know, friends and advisors question with the kind of agency to product crossover is like, is there a point at which, even if you're spending just a little bit of time on administration or marketing or talking to customers for your agency or your productized service, call them the same thing, in the long term, like a poorer utilization of your time in terms of kind of leverage and long-term outcome than working on your product full time. So like, are you just spending, even if it's 10% of your time kind of on the agency or service hamster wheel, versus could you put that 10% of your time into your product? And would that, in the long run, be better for you?
Be better, yeah. No, it's a really good question. I mean, for me, so because the SaaS, the one SaaS that I'm building is not making money, and the other one is barely making money. You know, it's I have to work on the agency, but literally, I was probably spending 10 to 20% of my day on the agency, and it's, you know, I mean, the returns are so great that it's a no-brainer for me. Yeah. So if I spend, you know, 2 hours a day and I make 90% of my money from that, it's, yeah, you know, one might argue, well, maybe you should be spending more of your time on the agency, but that's not really like, my heart is more, I think like you, I'm more in the product side of the business. So the way I look at it is spending my, you know, like I'll do the bare minimum to get the agency going. And I do take it seriously. I'm redoing the agency website, and I podcast for the agency. So, you know, things like that. are, you know, they're long tail, and I do see the value in it, and it's building my team. But in particular, having a product-based business and a dev team, I can get the cheap labor. So yeah. So the idea with buying SaaS is I want to, my goal is to, and I have a mentor that's doing this, so I'm following his path as well, is to say, buy like 10 SaaSes that are all doing 10,000 a month, you know, that sort of thing to get to, you know, and then, but they're flatlined. That's the key, is that if they're flatlined, you buy them and then, you know, you're going to get paid off in say 18 months. That's a formula.
Yep.
And then, you know, start use, and they all need to go together like a little sort of basket of services that all sort of go towards helping the same client. So his avatar is sort of e-commerce, and mine is going to be lead gen. So he's got all these things that help e-commerce people. So it's really, I think it kind of goes well with my style of work. I can't imagine being like one, you know, like one product and growing it up to, you know, whatever, and, you know, 500,000 a month or something like that. I'm much more like, I like to dabble, you know, so yeah. it kind of, it's more interesting to me because I can always be working on something different.
Do you think, I tend to be the same way, and I try to fight myself against it because I think I know that, like, if I was able to focus on one thing 100% all the time,
yeah,
that would be a better outcome. But I have to kind of respect my personal preferences and kind of how I feel and what energizes me. Do you think there would be a time, like, so say this, like, 10 SaaS businesses all doing 10,000 a month is kind of the goal. If you got there, or if one of the SaaS businesses started to do really well, do you think you would continue spending time on the agency, or would you kind of call that chapter of your business life closed and focus just on product?
I think it would keep it going, but I would probably get like a COO. Because to be honest with you, like, I'm the only thing that I'm good at is selling, right? So if I can find a good salesman to step in and just like replace it with some other, you know, like, so I need like a technical guy, or in fact, I have a CTO. My Indian partner is a great CTO. He's very knowledgeable. I'm really, you know, just a sales guy. I'm not even that technical. So I would definitely keep that going, because, and then I would build up the SOPs and keep that going because it's still lucrative. I like having the team because, you know, they give me a really good rate on the SaaS products. But the more interesting thing is that I think maybe what you're asking is that if I had 10 SaaSes and one just sort of started like, hey, this is sort of interesting, started to take off, then I probably would say, okay, this is where I will spend 80 to 90% of my time and, you know, kind of offload. Maybe I would sell some of the other ones. So I think that probably would be like where I would focus.
Yeah.
So if one did start to do really well and it needed the time and attention, I would focus my time and attention on that.
Interesting. Yeah. I find myself to be a good salesperson too. It's kind of my background, and for Podcast Motor, what I've done for a long time. We had a salesperson on the team, and before coronavirus, when almost all of our leads dried up, that was working really well. And I hope that we can get back to a point where he can come back on the team, but there's just nothing for him to do right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the person I would bring on later would be like an ops person to manage the team, organize the kind of the efficiencies that we have from a personnel standpoint. Cause that's for a service business or an agency, that's really all it is like, how do you get new clients? And then how do you fulfill the service for, you know, in the most efficient way, and that's time and
totally. People
hours and money and stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of switching gears a little bit to coronavirus. How are you seeing coronavirus affect your businesses? You know, all of them, I guess. Like, what are you seeing other than people are scared?
So the SaaS that I just bought is being really affected. It does online reputation for like yoga studios and gyms and music schools. So, I mean, they are not buying.
Yeah.
No matter what I say, they're just like, no. They're like, I don't even know if I'm going to be open. So it's definitely affecting that. And I've talked to some of my SaaS friends that have a similar type of client. There's a guy that does some cleaning services. So what he's done is he's built another SaaS or another quick service to help them that is not affected by by coronavirus. So that business is, you know, it's still going down. But thankfully, that also helped me get a cheaper price because it was definitely like a distressed sale.
Mm, yeah.
And then the agency, it has been doing fine. I seem to be getting more jobs now. And obviously, it's because there's less resistance to hiring remote teams. So I think that one of the biggest objections that I get is like, no, I'm going to hire in-house developers. We're going to bring an in-house team. And I'm not getting that now.
Yeah.
And I hope that after this, people will see that hiring remote isn't that big of a deal. So from that perspective, the agency has benefited. And so I'm very busy on the agency side. And so that's been, you know, been good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would also suspect that for companies, it's easier to kind of bucket this amount of resources that they want to put into hiring you as an agency versus hiring a full-time developer, whether they're remote or whether they're in the office, to say, okay, we're going to spend, you know, $20,000 on this thing and that's it. And if they have to kind of cut things off with you, it's less of a big deal than firing an employee, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's the way we understand that we're temporary, that so some of the clients, oddly, I seem to be getting real estate clients, and they're a little bit nervous. You know, one of the guys has he's in LA. He's starting to show some properties. The other company does, you know, the software for real estate. So, you know, if the real estate people are not selling, they're sort of stopping their services. They haven't started to do that yet. As I think the nature of the business is you sort of, you know, you sell a property and you get some cash that will hold you over for a few months until you sell another one.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully we'll see how things go.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Jumping back to the SaaS businesses, where are you sourcing those deals, or like talking with your mentor? What is the kind of approach that you're taking there?
So I've been on FE International's list, and I've been for about a year because I knew I wanted to buy SaaS. So I've been checking out the what's out there. And in speaking, you know, seeing the different businesses that come through, the ones that have more of like an agency model, you know, that, you know, like, oh, we're an SEO company, and we're selling, you know, basically they're selling their account book, you know, and their traffic, I guess, is more like an asset sale. But those are only going for sort of 2-3 multiples, whereas the product-based businesses, the ones that are growing, are doing much better. So I had a good gauge on what was a good deal. Like, so if you can essentially get your money back in 2 years, it's a good deal. And so the company that I bought is, I was going to get my money back in 2 months. So
oh, wow.
I knew it was a really good deal.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I told my mentor about it. It's like, my biggest concern was like, do you think this will be a distraction? If this is a dying business, do you think this will be a distraction? Should I just let it go? And he was like, it's like, you can get your money back in 2 months. Just do it. You know, it'll be a good experience. So, and in that case, in that sense, he was exactly right. Because I had to go through setting up a U.S. company, which is something I'd never done before. And, you know, I have to do all the set up the bank. And so that experience has been good. And now I'm writing SOPs on how to do that next time. I already have a U.S. company set up. I'll just roll it in. And so when I'm speaking with my accountant right now, I want them all to be coming in and look as like, I don't want them to be like fragmented. It's all one entity, mm-hmm. you know, so my one company, it's just so when I buy a SaaS, it's just adding to the overall gross revenues of the parent companies. And that's why I think it's good, because then I can use one credit card to pay for, you know, SEO for that site and this site, and it just keeps it clean.
Yeah. I'm reflecting on my own kind of personal situation.
I like how you're winging it, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I do like, yeah, I always say like the podcast is really selfish for like me talking to people I want to talk to.
Let's just get on and
air my issues. That's funny. So was this distressed deal something that came through FE International, or did you find it kind of more directly?
No, it was from my partners, because
yeah,
it was my partners.
Oh,
so
right.
They,
okay.
Yeah. So they had indicated that we're like, well, this will probably be the last year because it was a U.S. company.
Okay.
and they didn't want to have to do U.S. taxes for it. So, yeah, so I approached them and was like, you know, listen, what do you think about this? And they agreed. And I was, you know, I was contemplating, it's like, I think this might be a distraction. I think, but my mentor was like, no, do it. I think it'll be a good exercise. And by the way, when I say 10,000, like each, they should be organically growing too. So it's not like a static. It's like you get one. I won't even buy another company unless this is at 10K and it's going, you know, like adding 20 customers a month or, you know, like on a system, you know, so it's like growing by itself.
Yeah, I have I had a learning opportunity with buying a business that was basically doing nothing. I spent a whole lot of time and money trying to get it on the right path and just never could quite get it right. And I think that the distraction thing is what is kind of ringing true to me is I bought this business. It was like affiliate management software. And I just, I don't know, I couldn't get it right, like for a lot of reasons, I think. But the biggest one is that I always kind of knew it was a distraction from my other two businesses that were going well. And so like, I never gave it the time or the financial resources that it really needed. And like looking now at Castos and like the time and the resources that I give it, it ought to damn well be growing as much energy as I put into it. And I do agree with what you're saying that like getting something that's doing a little bit that you can turn around relatively quickly and that would then be kind of worth your time is a reasonable thing. I think that for me, the one lesson I'll always take away from sales camp was if it's not doing something, some revenue already, and I don't see a clear path to turning it around in a finite scope, like financial or time or whatever, that I wouldn't do it because you can just toil in this valley of shit for so long trying to figure it out, and product market fit and marketing message and all this kind of stuff is just, for me, I guess it turns out to be really risky to try to turn something around if you don't know what you're getting into really well.
I think that's right. That's definitely right. And so that was one of the reasons I wanted to get a mentor, and I pay him. So it's like a professional relationship, but he's in a place where he's doing exactly, he's got an agency, digital agency, it's a sort of more of a design agency, doing very well. And he's been buying SaaS's now. He bought his first one maybe 5 years ago, and that one's really starting to do very well. I think he bought it, the same sort of deal from some friends as a distressed sale, and he turned it around. And that's where he really got his sort of feet wet with that. And once it was going is when he bought. That's when he bought. So I say that I will buy 10, but I have no idea if I will or not. I'm just saying maybe this the other SaaS that I'm building now, maybe that takes off, and you know, I focus myself on that. But that's sort of the vision, and I selected him as a mentor because he was doing it. I was like, he's exactly where I want to be in 4 years or something.
Yeah. Is this the first time you've worked with a mentor
in this capacity? So I had a mentor he was a guy that had done very well. He was much older than me at the time. I was maybe in my early 30s, and he was in his 70s or something, and he was one of these guys that had done, he's a lawyer, but he bought the rights to some kind of rights to sell cellular airwaves or something like that. And he sold,
printing
sold
money.
Them and did, yeah, he did. He did really well. Like, you know, we're talking about like, you know, $300-400 million.
Wow.
And he had retired in Bermuda, and I was talking to him about some businesses. I was helping him out and sort of asked him to be a mentor. And at the time, I was also, again, looking at a business to buy. And he and I actually went in together on the business that I was showing. He liked it so much, he actually went in and bought it with me. And so I had him as a mentor for about 10 years. And that was great. He was really good, and I learned a lot from him. But we've sort of, we sold that business. And, you know, since he's a little bit older, and I don't want to bother him, you know. So that was my only other mentor. But so I went like sort of 3 years. I've had coaches. And whenever I get a good coach, I tend to do really well. But it's difficult finding the right type of coach. So I had a good coach, and I had him for like 3 months, and I swear I did so much work in 3 months that it set up me for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
you know. But he kind of went his own way, and then he got so expensive I couldn't afford him, and so I'm getting back now into having mentors. And this guy, we have a really good rapport. He's great. He charges a rate that's really, you know, it's like, you know, like a high end lawyer or something. But, you know, if I use him for an hour or two, he gives me homework, and, you know, it's more than enough for me to, you know, I only need an hour or two a month. So it's totally reasonable.
Yeah. How did you find your current mentor?
He was on a podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was listening to a podcast. I was doing research for my own podcast, and I heard him. He was talking about, like, you know, he's talking about what he was doing. It was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so I approached him, and he's a totally approachable guy. And he was like, yeah, sure. And I think it was better that he's not a coach, because he's just running his businesses.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm already doing this for one other guy. We have lunch like once a month. So he's a local guy. And he's like, I'd love to do this for you. And so the one thing that I think, one of my strengths is that I'm coachable, you know, like I will be like, once I recognize that the guy has value to give me, I will be very sort of like accepting of the information that he gives me. And I will like remove any, you know, previous bias or, you know, ego or anything like that, and be like, whatever he does, I will do. And if I don't agree with it, I'll tell him right then. So what do you think about doing it this way? And the reason is because I had dabbled in coaching myself. It was mostly this like mentorship. And I get on with people, and I'd spend like a good amount of time with them for a while, and I'd tell them to do stuff, and then they wouldn't do it, and be like, why are we even speaking?
Yeah, you know, waste of your time.
I told you to do this stuff and you're not doing it. It's like, you're wasting my time and you're wasting your time. So that also made me realize, like, if I work with this guy, I'm going to do what he tells me to do, because otherwise it's just, you know, waste of everyone's time.
I worked with a coach about a year ago, getting up to a year ago, I guess. It was one of the guys that founded WP Curve, Alex McClafferty, for Podcast Motor, for my product or service business. And it was a really good experience because, yeah, I mean, he's a really down-to-earth guy. He obviously has been there and done that and had a really successful exit. And now in Tiny Seed, having Rob and Einar as mentors and their whole kind of group of advisors has been really good. And Tiny Seed is winding down here in the next couple of weeks, and I'm not working with Alex anymore. And so I'm looking to either really firm up a mastermind group or probably a coach, because I am peers with a lot of people that I really respect, but I don't have an opportunity to chat with somebody who's five steps ahead of me that often. And I feel like, kind of like you were talking about, I feel like I need to pay for this person's time. And I feel like, because it hurts. Like, if I had some calls with Alex where I didn't do what I said I would do in the previous 2 weeks, and he would get on and say, like, Craig, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, I'm happy to take your money, but it's a disservice to you and your business. And so, yeah, I think in the next, you know, in the next month or so, I am going to be looking to get with somebody. And I think for me, it was, we were doing twice a week, and that was a really good cadence. And then I think we did monthly because Castos really started taking off. And so I spent less time on Podcast Motor. But yeah, I think that I think once you get kind of to, you know, Rob calls it like default alive, like this 10,000 a month number, like when you get to default alive, where like you can pay yourself and you can invest a little more in the business, then like being really strategic about what you're doing and where you're focusing your time and the, even like the product decisions and marketing decisions you make get really important, I think.
Yeah.
And the value of, you know, say it's $500 a call, you know, it's $1,000 a month or something like that, for somebody to give you a much better chance to be successful in that respect is
it's massive. Pennies the leverage to pay. You get from it. Yeah. And because they've already done it, you know, so you're not sort of just stumbling through. And so he's done exactly what I wanted to do. And I knew that. And that's why I approached him and I said, listen, so this is how I did it. I actually did it on a podcast.
Nice.
So I said, I would love to podcast you. It's like you're doing, you know, you're a very interesting guest on the show. So that's how I sort of started the relationship. So I got him on a podcast, and then like I had like 3 minutes at the end of the show, and I was like, hey, would you mentor me? And he was like, it's like, yeah, sure, I'd do that. So we literally, I set it up like at the end of a podcast. So I recommend, like, if anyone's, you know, sort of has a podcast, it's a great way to find your mentor, you know, and it's exactly looking at that guest or that person that's 5 years ahead of where you want to be. And that's what I did. And I you know, purposely selected him because he was exactly where I wanted to be, and he was doing exactly what I wanted to do with the agency, you know, sort of the split. Let's say he's making $10 million a year, and it's like the agency's doing five and his SaaS is doing five, you know, that's like what I envision, you know. And so he's doing that, and he's got his teams just doing, you know, and he's just, yeah, he's living a great life and loves what he does. And
that's awesome.
That's
awesome. Kind of wrapping up, I'd love to hear, you've obviously kind of, in a good way, been around the block a few times with business and have a lot of experience. I would love to hear kind of what your crystal ball is telling you about the kind of world we're in or going to with respect to coronavirus.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely unpredictable. So the way I'm doing is diversifying, you know, so even the way I'm playing the market, I'm straddling the market. So I have a hedge, you know, I have some spy puts and, you know, some I'm long as well, because I honestly don't think anyone knows. Right. I do think the market's ahead of itself. So I would be more on the bearish side. So the agency is there for me. If, you know, like if my SaaS, you know, let's say, God forbid, you know, the small businesses can't come back for whatever reason, you know, I would have to pivot. And so I think people need to be looking at, you know, just being able to pivot and have diversified. That's the other reason I like sort of a basket of companies that I can, or services that I can fall back on. And if one starts doing well, then you just focus your attention on that. So yeah. I've always been huge on diversification.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And I agree. I mean, I don't think any of us, you hear a lot of people talking, and some of them they're very, very loudly, but I don't think any of us have any idea where this is going to go in like the medium term. So like the next 12 months, like,
yeah,
it could be fine. I think that's pretty unlikely. We could all go back into confinement in 3 weeks. Like we were talking about before we started recording, we just got out of confinement here 2 days ago and you got out a couple weeks ago. I mean, it could go back and all the businesses and all the travel get shut back down. And nobody knows.
That would be pretty devastating. Yeah. The market would tank and people would, you know, I do think that it would be very difficult for the governments to be able to sustain paying unemployment for, you know, sort of an indefinite period of time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's certainly an interesting time. I think a lot of us are fortunate to have businesses that operate in a remote environment to remote customers. That's really great that a lot of people that listen to this show are not as affected as the guy that owns the restaurant down the street that's been shut down for 9 weeks. So.
That's right. I think you can't fight it either. You know, you need to, if you weren't online, you need to be thinking about how to get online and how to get remote.
Yeah.
And that would be highest priority if you're listening and you don't have, and you're not set up to go online and you're sort of waiting, oh, this is all going to blow over. Yes, it might, but it might not also, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Awesome. Jordy, this is a really fun conversation. Thanks for coming on the show. For folks that want to kind of check out more about what you guys do, where's the best place to connect?
Yeah, so onestopdevshop.io is my agency. And I'll give a quick plug. We have no risk 30 days and we are on time and on budget. Or it's on us. So that's our guarantee. And then Wave Review is the SaaS that I just bought. WaveReview.com.
Cool.
So you can find me at either one of those.
And your podcast?
Is on the One Stop Dev Shops.
Gotcha.
It's called the Big Break Software Podcast. It's about how to start a SaaS business.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Craig.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.